and welcome to episode 190 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and as always, I'm joined by the creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who puts the sass in Assassin is Tony Esmond.
I thought you were going to say Sasquatch there, for my hairiness.
He puts the ass in Assassin.
that was in the first draft. That was. Yes.
Puts the shepherd in a German shepherd. That sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Very
wrong.
Oh, dear.
Worse is German in the shepherd.
Yeah, and don't ruin all of these, because you could have said some of these off air, and then I could have made notes for the future weeks of the show. Anyway, because it's getting harder to think of those things every week. Anyway, welcome, folks, to episode 190 already. Blimey. 200 is on its way.
Yeah.
We've got plans.
And, for 200. Big plans.
Yeah, we might talk a little bit about that later after the interview that we've got coming up.
Yes.
Which I know all our lovely listeners are excited about. And thank you for all the responses online when we announced it this week. So, it's been one of my most popular posting weeks, I think, on social media.
Okay.
You've done good.
Yeah, social media can sometimes be a wasteland, can't it?
I can't say Dave Brown's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Dave! Did you see? He's asked me to say the C word at you.
Yeah,
as a little present. Yeah. Oh, I haven't said it yet.
Yeah, no, don't say it at all, Tony. David. Otherwise, you're going in the sin bin.
Okay.
The sin bin.
That's a busy bin, my friend.
Yeah, the sin bin, which is a new part of the show that you'll find out. Like, No, it's not.
I go in the bin and commit lots of sin.
I was going to suggest on the awesome comic thing, we could help promote ourselves like the Captain Marvel did by everyone posting up their pictures of their cats or pets. That would have made me a C if I did that. So
I mean, you laugh. I would be all over that. You know I would.
You would be. You love a cat.
Yeah. I absolutely love it.
We'll do that next week then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what everyone, in following the tradition of Captain Marvel, everyone can make up really bad reviews and post them on the... the Podbean as well. That'd be right.
But do you know what isn't pathetic, Tony? Do you know what isn't pathetic?
Your balls?
No.
Oh.
No.
What, you mean your balls are pathetic?
Yeah. What's going on? Oh, God, I've done myself.
Have you? Congratulations.
This is getting cut out. It is, of course, our lovely sponsors, Comic House. Yes, Comic House are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. We love them, and thankfully, they like us, because they sponsor the show, thank God.
Yeah.
There's a huge selection of titles on their database. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free. So it's just another avenue for you to sell your books, which I know everyone wants more avenues to sell their books, whether it be Etsy or whatever. But Comic House has a store, so people can order hard copies of your book. They also have a digital library, which is getting bigger all the time.
Yep.
And, for instance, what have they got on the database at the moment, Dan?
On this week's update email, we've got Moonframe, another issue of Monologue, number 2 by Stuart J. McClune, a book called Stalkerville.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Who's done that?
That's by one of my fellow hosts, Vincenzo Hunt.
I really appreciate you trying so hard to be nice about me then, Dan, because your instinct was to go for the low blow, wasn't it?
It's difficult, isn't it? I remember I reviewed that before we did this podcast, didn't I? Do you remember? Years ago.
Yeah.
God, it seems so long ago.
I know.
We've got The Complete Charlatan Tales. Reynard City is on there. Hack and Slash versus Vampirella. And Weasel Meisters, volume issue 2. There's a whole slew of new titles on the app. I was trying to say to a couple of creators during the week that if you can make a PDF for your comic, you can get it on Comic House and start making money and getting it out to new readers.
Yes, totally. Because the app that they have is really good. All of the digital database goes on that app. And we've said about it in past weeks, but I think it bears repeating. For instance, if you've got books that are like out of print, or perhaps you've just got PDFs, upload them to Comic House, because they, you will get a return on that, and also it'll get you readers, more people.
And if you've got no copies left, what are you doing? You might as well make some money on it, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. For instance, we said Stalkerville, that I did a small print run of that. That won't really be anywhere else. I'm not really promoting that anywhere else, so I put it on Comic House. So,
and, yeah, I've got a copy.
And hopefully, well, of course you do. Hopefully a lot of people will read it and then judge me in horribly, horrible ways.
Yeah, or not read it and judge him as normal.
Well, yeah. Judge me as you wish.
Where did he do Stalkerville, Vince?
When?
MySpace.
It was in the days of... Yeah, of course.
I remember you saying that.
Before it imploded like a dying star.
MySpace, then back to my place. Hey, Vince.
That's not a way. That's not the way to live your life, Dan.
Is that a
You're
thing?
Better than that.
Is that already a thing?
That was a thing, yeah.
Was it? You meet people on MySpace and you get to do the dirty with them.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you put webcomics on there. God, no. For God's sake. Jesus Christ. Grow up. Yeah. Grow up.
It's like, it's like Spanish Fly, a webcomic.
Yeah.
I bet there must be a comic somewhere called The Spanish Fly.
There is.
Oh, is there?
Is it?
Spanish comic called Spanish Fly.
You're making that up.
No.
There's a comic called the human Fly.
Yeah, there is. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah,
published
based
by
on a real person.
Yeah,
but okay.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, lovely people, what is Fly, and that is Comic House. And
we've got a guest on today from America who doesn't really know us, and she's going to listen to this bit and think we're freaks.
No, I mean, if anyone's listened to any part of our show, they already know that, Tony.
That's true.
I mean, how we managed to sort out this week's guest is a miracle.
Yeah, it was. It's what they call a con in America, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It's been like Ocean's 3.
We're a proper Comic Con. see what I did there? Play on words. Anyway, our lovely sponsors, for only £3 a month, you get access to their huge digital database. We've only mentioned a few of it there, and there's loads of it. So go to comichouse.com to find out more and to start your 14-day free trial. Mm. So there you go. And thank you to them.
We'll be uploading the next issue of the Awesome Comic on there shortly
Anytime
as well.
Soon.
Anytime yes. soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And all of the red masks on there.
We'll be rolling in green money all over our beds. Let's roll in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be like Indecent Proposal.
We'll be like, or Walter White in Breaking Bad. We'll just have like sheds full of it.
I can't come up with a reference, so I'm the odd one out there.
That's not like you, Dan.
Scrooge McDuck.
Yes, back to Scrooge McDuck again.
Much like 2000 AD, everything comes back to Scrooge McDuck.
I think I need to do like some kind of sort of subverted story about Scrooge, because he clearly had something else going on, didn't he? Yeah. He wasn't just a rich miser. There was clearly something going on there, wasn't there?
Yeah. I'm sure they've built up a rich and varied backstory for him. So I don't want to really say, you know, make jokes about the character, because you know we'll just get called out on social media. All the McDuckers out there.
All the Ducksters.
All the mother duckers. anyway, folks, this week we might as well just get to the interview, because that's what people are here for. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about us.
Yeah. Yeah. They can come back for us talking about comics and stuff in a minute. But this week, of course, you're here for our fantastic guest. Yes, I do a bit of an intro in a minute, so you'll hear. So I won't double it up. But we were very, very pleased to be joined this week by the mighty Heather Antos. So, as you know, is a comics editor that's been on the scene for quite some time, and is now working with of our favourite publishers that we haven't talked about for a little while. So
a couple of months, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. We went mad on Valiant for a while, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to hold on to that water, because I've got a few questions about that.
So yeah, there's going to be a bit of Valiant talk, there's going to be a bit of editing talk, and there's just going to be loads of great comic talk coming up now with our chat with Heather Antos. Right then, folks, this week we are joined by an editor who's worked with Marvel Comics, created the awesome Signal Boost Sunday, which I've seen for quite a bit. I've even got involved. And is now flying the flag for Amazing Comics with Valiant, a company that I know many of our listeners are huge fans of, as are we. We are very pleased to be joined by the mighty Heather Antos. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys.
Hi, Heather.
You are more than welcome. Obviously, you've just started at Valiant, which is a hugely exciting place to be at the moment. And we're going to talk about a little bit about what they got coming up and about editing comics. Heather's already threatened to try and put me off during this whole interview and cursed at us, which you You may hear in the outtakes.
Yeah, you might hear later.
Yeah.
But you're only a couple of months, you were saying, into Valiant so far. You've been there since the new year. Yeah.
I've been there like 6-7 weeks now, so it's very, very fresh new. I'm still getting my feet wet in all things Valiant history. But I love it. I love the company. I love my team there. Everyone is super fantastic, and I'm very, very excited for what they're allowing me to do and what's coming up in the future. It's going to be awesome. Really good stuff. It's going to be a great 2019, 2020. I can't wait.
Yeah. Cool. I really do feel like 2019, I just feel so much more positive about 2019 for comics in general, just across the board, than like the past couple of years. There's an excitement in the air. Don't you find that, guys?
Yeah, I think especially with Valiant as well. If you go to the back pages of your comic, you've almost got like something big happening almost every month for the next 3 or 4 months, haven't you? You know, it's like
That's great. It's
like the clock ticking on each one coming. I'm looking at thinking, when's Harada starting and all this sort of thing. Yeah. Definitely.
So, oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, between like Forgotten Queen and Punk Mambo and Harada, Incursion just started. I mean, there's a lot of new stuff happening at Valiant this year.
We just did a very gushing review of Incursion.
I've got to hear that first issue. They're about to hear that in about half an hour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Christ.
Oh, Tony.
I've ruined it. Yeah, but
you could never be a Time Lord, could you?
I don't know what's going on. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. But yeah, he's very. We did enjoy it. Yes. Yeah. Braithwaite's a beast, isn't he? How good is Doug Braithwaite? Just amazing.
He's so good. Yeah.
But before we get started on like the world of the Valiant universe and editing and stuff, let's start with a kind of origin story. So where did your personal love of comics actually start?
You know, it's funny. I get asked this question a lot, and I'm never really quite sure. I've always been fascinated in writing and drawing and storytelling. I mean, I say I've been drawing comics before I knew what comics were as a kid. As a kid, my parents literally had to separate my brothers and I because we would fight over the Sunday comic section of the newspaper. you know, we watched the Adam West, Burt Ward Batman television show growing up. Yeah, nice. It's just they've just always been such a huge part of my history and my childhood, that when a friend came to me after college and like had suggested, like, you really like comics, why don't you pursue that? Like, it was kind of a no-brainer. You know, it was something I was always passionate about but never really had considered a career option until I was about 23. But once that had been suggested to me, it was kind of like horse blinders were on. That was all my focus, and I wasn't going to stop until I made it a reality. And luckily I was able to do that, and now my life is 24/7 comics, and it's kind of the greatest thing ever.
Cool.
Oh, God, 24/7 comics. God, there's a lot of people that are very jealous.
But well, okay, I won't lie. There are some video games thrown in there too. It's not all comics.
And I suppose you have to sleep as well, I guess. Do you sleep?
I mean, no, that's what coffee's for.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the people that listen to this show, for instance, we're making a lot of comics, and, you know, we've got full-time jobs and we're trying to make comics in the part-time and stuff. Do you find that, like, working full-time in comics... You know, how does that... I mean, obviously you've got a passion for it that you absolutely love, but I don't think sometimes people get... It's like every job, isn't it? There's ups and downs, even if you absolutely adore every single second of it. You know, I mean, what sort of advice would you have for someone that wants to do comics like 24/7?
Oh my God, I mean, you're 100% right. It's like a job, like anything else. You're you know, you still have office politics, you still have, you know, like... stupid corporate bullshit that you have to deal with, that, you know, you have to, you know, stupid things you have to do that you don't necessarily creatively agree with, but have to be done for the bottom line, right? You know, that ugly word in business, the bottom line. And but like at the end of the day with comics, I always say, like, you know, it's comics. You know, if the worst thing I have to do is I have to, you know, tell this one story that I don't necessarily agree with, but I still get to make a comic, like, at the end of the day, I'm still making a comic, you know.
Yeah, and there are elements to it. There's the beauty of the artwork, isn't there? You know, you can have there's all sorts of things in there.
Well, exactly, and that's one of the things. Like, when one of my last assignments at Marvel, when I was at Marvel, was I was told to do a relaunch episode, a one-shot issue of Not Brand X. And
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, like, I was just so stressed out and so busy with Gwenpool, with Star Wars, with Deadpool, with everything else going on, that like the last thing I wanted was just this stupid one shot that I had to be given that, like, you know, like, fuck, I have to come up with something for this. I was so exhausted, so stressed. I didn't want to do it. But that became a challenge for me. And that became like, how can I make this fun? How can I make this something that I'm excited to do? And at the end of the day, like, Not Bringing Back number 13 or number 14, I think it is one of my favorite projects I've ever done at Marvel because I challenged myself to make it that way.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing with comics that you can do is, you know, it is creative. It is collaboration. Mm-hmm. You know, how can I cast a team that I'm excited to work with? How can I make this a story that I'm excited to tell? How can I make this something that I can get fans like you guys excited to talk about and excited to read?
Yeah.
That's my job. You know, that's at the end of the day, that is my job.
And do you find that there's like an element, like with a lot of creative sort of media and projects and stuff, as soon as something comes out and you've got a printed copy in your hand or a PDF or whatever it is, all of the bad moments or the frustration fades away and you've got nothing but the good, you know, the good memories when you just think, look at this, it's stunning, it's beautiful.
Not necessarily true. I won't name names. I won't say what it is, but there is a issue of a Star Wars comic. I'm not even going to say what series or anything. But there is an issue that is one of the most talked about, one of the most highly critically acclaimed issues of a Star Wars comic that we've done, that like gives me trauma flashbacks. Oh, no. It's like how terrible the process was.
Really?
But it is the comic that the issue that every fan wants to talk about. And
so it's like your Apocalypse Now. Is it kind of like
it is. I mean, it's kind of nice that like something that caused me such like anguish and pain it's something that brought so many other people so much joy because they have no idea.
Yeah.
Do you think there's some kind of sort of karmic balance there where you've got to suffer for your art, haven't you, almost? You know, that's what happens.
There has to be, but like the fact that like people keep wanting to talk to me about it, like it just kills me.
Don't cut an ear off. Don't cut your ear off. Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. That is because we don't see that. We just see the end product, don't we? I mean, these days we hear about some of the BS that happens behind the scenes occasionally when someone has like a natter on Twitter about it. But for the true comic fans, we're not interested in that. We want to see the beauty of the page and we want to read the story of the characters. You know, we want to love what we read, you know, and we don't really see that sometimes. It's strange, isn't it? Do you think that's something that maybe if you kept going might make you a little bit bitter, do you think?
Yes and no. I mean, it's what comes with the job. I mean, my background is in theater and film production, so I'm used to, you know, doing the hard work behind the scenes that nobody sees. And like, you know, no one goes into comic editing to be a superstar spotlight person on the forefronts. Yeah. You know, and in comics editing, you know, if a project you work on turns out to be the greatest project ever made, you expect all the credit to be given to the creative team. And if everything goes,
and you want it to be, don't you? You want it to go that way.
100%. Yeah. And if you, but if it goes to shit or if, you know, people don't like it or whatever, like you're going to be blamed. Like that's just how it is. And, you know, that's, and at the end of the day, like part of that is your responsibility. You are the editor. Your job is to make sure the integrity and quality of the book is the best as it possibly can be. So
you're right. When it's continuity or maybe even spelling or stuff, nobody directs it at the writer or the eyes, do they? Why did the editor see that? You hear that all the time, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, so when it's bad stuff, you get it. But if it's amazingly beautiful and, you know, poetical, it's the writers, you know, the writer of the eyes, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So what drew you to actually want to be an editor in specific, you know, that sort of role within comics?
I think what first drew me to being an editor was the fact that it was this, you know, it was this credit that I saw in every single book, but I didn't quite necessarily know what it was they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because in traditional book publishing, you know what an editor does, right? But that in such a visual medium that is comics, with so many different moving parts, it can't be the same thing, you know.
No. Yeah.
Sure, the editor reads the script, but there has to be more than that. And I Googled it, and I looked up all the different books out there on making comics, and no one ever talked about what it is an editor did. It was just this kind of mysterious, you know, omnipotent role, right? This omnipotent being that is the god of comics, that can make or break a career, or is the person that ruins everything. And I love a challenge. I love a mystery. And I happened to realize, like, a bunch of the same comics I was reading happened to all be edited by the same, like, you know, two or three people. And for me, I was like, oh, there's something to this. There's something to this role of an editor.
Who were you looking to at the time, Meadow? Who were the sort of people that you were looking to as examples? So
at the time, for me, it was Mike Martin, Scott Alley, and Jordan White, who later became my boss at Marvel. Right. And what I did, because I was a senior in college at this time and trying to figure out, you know, what I wanted to do with my life outside of school. I did what any good millennial does, and I started tweeting these guys. I had been writing for a couple different pop culture websites at the time, doing like entertainment reviews and movies and comics and interviews and all that stuff. And so I had a tiny little following, kind of established a name for myself.
Am I right in remembering you did some small press stuff? You edited some small press stuff as well.
I did. Yeah.
And
so I just reached out to these guys and I was just like, you know, I'm going to be at C2E2. Are you going to be at C2E2? Will you sit down and talk to me and explain to me what a comic editor does? I'm really fascinated by this. And that's how I met Jordan, and we sat down for an hour, and he explained to me what comic editing was, and I left that show knowing this is it. This is what I can do. Awesome. This is what my skills lie in, and I'm going to do this. I don't care how long it takes. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a comic book editor. And I guess it worked out.
Yeah, it went all right. Because I think you edited a book that Chris Sides, who's a pal of ours, I think.
He did Unlawful Good. That's the book that got me the job at Marvel.
Yeah, Sides is a big pal of ours. He's almost a neighbor of mine. Yeah, he's a really, really creative guy. Yeah, and the top bloke. Yeah. Even though he did get a T-shirt printed that said "Shut Up, Tony," which he used to wear at conventions.
Yeah, that was the best. I want to see that come back. But
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I shall tweet that picture at you now, Heather, so you can look at it.
Perfect. I love it.
So those things you found out about what an editor is, because we've talked about editing a bit on the show. We've had a couple of like small press and indie editors, but like you say, for most people, they don't know the ins and outs or what goes into it. So what were some of the major learnings you had from those initial talks about what the job was?
Well, I guess one of the big things, and I think one of the biggest misconceptions about comic book editing, is like a lot of people assume that an editor is just a proofreader, but that's not the case whatsoever. You know, a proofreader is a completely different role. You know, every publisher has a proofreader. That's someone else entirely different. Sure, an editor, like, while they're reading things, that they catch, you know, grammar mistakes or spellings, obviously correct them, but that's not your job. At the end of the day, I would say the closest comparison to what a comic book editor is closer to like a film or TV producer. Your job is to cast a project. It's to, you know, maybe pitch ideas. It's to make up schedules, confirm deadlines, chase down the different moving parts, do marketing, come up with solicits, you know, different little hooks that you can come up with. It's to maintain budget, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's 3 a.m. therapy when a creator doesn't think that their work is good enough. And you're doing this for, like, you know, when I was at Marvel, I was doing 16 to 20 different books a month. So you're doing this for an insane amount of projects. You know, you're working with an insane amount of different talent and juggling a bunch of different projects all at the same time. You know, you're a little bit therapist, a little bit proofreader, a little bit, you know, story consultant.
There's no going home and turning your phone off, is there, for that job?
No, there really isn't, because, like, that's the other thing, too, is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, everyone who worked in comics was living in New York City for the most part, because that's just where everything was. But now, thanks to the internet, I'm working with talent in Japan. I'm working with talent in Italy. I'm working with talent in England. You know, I'm working with talent all over the place. And you're welcome. When I was working on Star Wars, I'm setting up phone conversations between San Francisco with Lucasfilm and New York City with Marvel and London with Karen Gillan. You know, like that's a 9-hour time difference. And then at the same time, my cover artist is Komome Shirahama, who lives in Japan. And so if I would wake up in the middle of the night at 2-3 a.m. For whatever reason, my first instinct would be to check my email, because if someone in Japan is emailing me with a question, I want to be able to respond to them while it's still 2 p.m. their time. That way they're not waiting and losing an entire day. So you're never turning it off. I have so many phone calls with talent on the weekends. I do podcasts like this on the weekends. It never ends, but honestly, like it's when it's something you love, when it's something you're passionate about, like it's not work, right? Yeah. Like I'm happy to do it. This excites me. Like there's nothing else I would rather be doing at the end of the day. Like the stuff that I help create and the stuff that I help make, you know, makes the lives of like the fans so much brighter and happier. And like, that's why I do it. It's so much fun. And I love the joy that it just kind of helps spread across the world.
I mean, and it also speaks volumes that you've got this full-time job that's keeping you awake at all hours. Well, that and the coffee. But then you're taking free time to talk to, you know, podcast, you know, people like us, essentially. You know, you're doing it and the passion just shows through. You know, doing this show as long as we have, you can tell within the first like 2 minutes of talking to someone if they're in it for real or not.
Yeah.
And like immediately it just comes across, you know, we got a lifer.
Exactly. Yeah. And people want to hear that though as well, you know.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, I may be getting over a cold, but I've still got some life in me.
Yeah, but the comics don't stop for colds, do they? I mean,
they truly don't. My sick, so a sick day for me is like, you know, sitting huddled up on my couch, wrapped in a blanket, but with a laptop in front of me.
So kind of, how do you keep track of like being the editor on so many titles? Can you sort of read something and say, hold on, that doesn't hold with the story so far? Isn't that tricky with like having a lot of titles?
Oh my gosh, like it can be. It's funny, like coming to Valiant, it's so much less stressful
because they've got quite a tight line of comics, haven't they? They don't go mad. There's no like 14 Exo Man of War titles, is there? It's not like that.
And Valiant hasn't been around as long as you know, like Marvel has, and so Valiant doesn't publish as many monthly titles as Marvel did, so there's the continuity is a lot easier to follow. I'm still learning it, but oh my gosh, when I was in charge of the Star Wars line, you know, I'm checking art against 3 different versions of the Millennium Falcon, right? Like I have the prequel version, the classic version, and then the new trilogy version.
And they're quite unforgiving Star Wars fans, aren't they?
They're hugely unforgiving, and it would be really hard because I'd go from reading a script of Obi-Wan and Anakin, which takes place between episodes 1 and 2. And then I'd jump and check, you know, some stuff from Stuart Immonen working on Jason Aaron's classic era between A New Hope and Empire. And then, but now I'm doing the Force Awakens adaptation. So now I got to check and, you know, make sure that art is correct. And, or the same thing with C-3PO or, you know, any of the other characters, like which version of Luke's lightsaber is this? Which version of Darth Vader is this? Which version of the TIE fighter is this? And, it was a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. I love it. Like I've been a huge Star Wars fan my entire life, but it does get a bit meticulous and it does get a bit tedious.
And do you have like sort of Bibles of each sort of era of like Star Wars to reference against, or were you?
Oh yeah, 100%. I had all my books that I have just from being a fan of my own that I brought into the office, plus all the reference that Lucasfilm gave me, plus Lucasfilm helped out whenever I had a question. It was really funny when growing up, I was part of a group, my friend group was all huge Star Wars fans. And I never considered myself to be like a huge, huge Star Wars fan. I always considered myself to be a casual Star Wars fan until I came to Marvel and had to, like, Jordan was asking me, oh, we need to come up with a different alien species for, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I started listing off alien species from, like, the different planets. And he didn't recognize half of them. And that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, no, I am a Star Wars nerd. Like, this is...
Do you sort of shout in your face at him and stuff like that?
When I suggested Mustafar for a thing, and he asked me what Mustafar was, and he didn't know, and I was like, that's the planet where, you know, Anakin became Darth Vader. I mean, like, that's when I knew, like, yeah, I'm the real Star Wars nerd.
You could say that the Padawan has become the Jedi.
I had to do so much translation of Ouroboros that I'm fluent in Ouroboros now. So
was he a bit tricky?
They're not transferable skills, are they? Let's face it. No. I think you're stuck with this now, aren't you? Let's face it. Yeah.
Truly, yeah. You know what? It is a resume builder for some very specific niche fields, and I'll take that to my grave.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good.
So it must have been tricky, because there was at one point, like, you didn't have like the new material, and there was all kind of like the extended universe stuff and the stuff in between, which Disney kind of knocked on the head. So I can imagine the timeline and getting stuff working in regards to that must be really tricky. I mean, do you have to ring him up and say, is this still valid anymore, or is that out the window?
Yeah, I mean, that would happen from time to time. We worked extremely closely with Lucasfilm. Like, everything we worked on, every script we worked on, like, it would go through Jordan and I, and then we would pass it up to Lucasfilm, and they would give their notes to make sure continuity fit and everything. And if there were ever any like really big hiccups with anything like coming down the pipeline that people didn't know yet or whatever, like, we would hop on a phone call, and it was all pretty amicable. And like, part of the reason I did get hired into Marvel is because of how huge a fan of Star Wars I was. I mean, I grew up reading all of, you know, the expanded universe and watching all the shows, and you know, I grew up playing the Wizards of the Coast, like, RPG tabletop game that was based off of D&D. So, like, Star Wars is very much part of my identity. So me coming in wasn't, you know, it wasn't just coincidence.
I like the fact that there's a lot of people out there will be very pleased that it was almost like exam conditions, Star Wars exam, to get the job. Yeah. You know, it's like rows of chairs in an exam hall. Right, turn your papers over. Off we go. Yeah, it's like that almost, isn't it?
I tried to watch the holiday special over Christmas.
Which is the greatest Star Wars film that it was ever made.
I couldn't get through that, man. I was just... It was the season to be jolly, but not watching that. I was...
I need to find it, because I was just talking about this the other day, about... I watched this, like, almost like documentary about the making of the holiday special. And just like how ridiculous it was. It was originally supposed to only be like 30 minutes long, but the network needed it to be, you know, an hour or whatever. And so, like, how they like tried to fill it in, and just like,
yeah, it does seem like a bit of padding, doesn't it? Yeah, there's a little bit of padding going on. Yeah.
It truly, truly does. And like, I mean, it's, you go back and watch it, and like Carrie Fisher, God rest her soul, like, she is high out of her mind in this, you know. And then like Bea Arthur is in it, of all people. It's so ridiculous, but it's so much fun. I don't know. I love it. It holds a near and dear place in my heart.
Yeah. Because basically Lucas wanted that like expunged, didn't he, from the Star Wars sort of canon. And we could have done the Streisand effect with the Lucas effect, because that kind of backfired badly, and everyone wanted a copy and wanted to see it.
Yeah.
Oh dear. But obviously,
but it wasn't just Star Wars you were involved in. You were involved heavily in a lot of new characters at Marvel as well, weren't you? Did you want to talk about that either? Yeah,
for sure. I mean, like, the Star Wars was obviously half of my job at Marvel, but the other part that I tackled was I was a big hand in Jerry Duggan's Deadpool run. at Marvel. And then my baby, which anyone who follows me on Twitter knows well and dear, is Gwenpool. I was one of her co-creators. Nice. And that will be the highlight of my career. Like, I don't care what else I do the rest of my life. Like, Gwenpool will be the highlight of my career for the rest of my life.
I got to tell you that, just quickly back to that Deadpool run, that's my son's favorite run of comics. I forced my son into reading comics. He's 21 now, Heather. So it was like Clockwork Orange. I just sort of glued his eyes open. But he loved that run. Absolutely loved it. Yeah, great stuff. Really good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. But Gwenpool's quite a thing as well, isn't it? I mean, it's just going from strength to strength still, you know.
Yeah, as a character. I mean, like, the thing that blows my mind still about Deadpool, about Gwenpool, and I can't wrap my head around it, is that, like, she shouldn't exist. She really shouldn't exist. She just appeared on a variant cover for part of, like, the Gwen Stacy mashup month, and for some reason, she was the cover that people, you know, were drawn to, and within, like, a week of that image is released by Chris Pachala, like, people were cosplaying, people were doing fan art, like, it was all over the place, and Marvel
I was at New York just after she sort of hit, and literally every second female cosplayer was Gwenpool, you know,
it was insane, and so marketing was just like, all right, like, you know, let's see what we can do with this, can we make her a character, and so they came to Jordan and I in the Deadpool office, and we're like, all right, so Gwen Stacy, which is a Sony character, Deadpool, which is a Fox character, come up with Gwenpool, which is a Marvel character. Have fun. Go nuts. So it was a giant legal kerfuffle. Like, the legal team hated us.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
But, like, our goal was, like, we wanted to come up with something that was unique, something that wasn't Gwen Stacy, something that wasn't Deadpool, but something that fans could still resonate to. And, you know, the fact that we were able to create a brand new character that has nothing to do with either legacy of Gwen Stacy or Deadpool, that, you know, got a 25 issue run when Gambit can't even hold a 5-issue run, or Iceman can't even hold a 5-issue run.
Yeah.
Classic characters. And she's in games, she's in toys, she's in merchandise, she has statues, she gets, you know, exclusives. You know, like, she is one of the most devoted fan bases I've ever seen, and it blows my mind. Like, I feel so honored and so humbled to be a part of creating something that's going to have this sort of lasting effect for years.
Yeah, I mean, you've ticked a couple of things off your bucket list already, and I mean, obviously, for anyone that thinks, like, oh, you know, I'm juggling a lot of things making these comics, try editing like Star Wars comics and the Deadpool comics at the same time, because they're quite popular, all those books, and there's quite a few of them. So, yeah.
Good luck with that.
For a period there, there was a Deadpool book out almost every week, wasn't there?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, we had the main Deadpool series, Double Shift, and then there was the Deadpool Mercs for Money ongoing series, and then there was, like, whatever Deadpool miniseries was going on at the time.
You got the,
like,
Spider-Man one and the Black Panther one now.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
non-stop.
Yes.
Non-stop.
It's a lot of Deadpool all the time.
I still know that because I still pay for my 21-year-old son's pull list. And, occasionally it does cross my...
Please tell me he says thank you.
Yeah, he does. He's a good lad. But occasionally I do think, I wish there was a few less Deadpool comics sometimes.
So obviously, you know, you've already made your mark, and you've got your legacy characters there, but now you've jumped into the hugely exciting world of the Valiant universe, which has just started. This must be a hugely exciting endeavor for you. Obviously, you've just started, but this, aside from the job itself, it must have been huge fun just to go back and read some Valiant comics.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun diving into this, like, you know, established superhero universe that I didn't grow up with.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've always heard of Valiant. I've been aware of Valiant. And right when it was like like literally the New York Comic Con before I got hired by Marvel. So like 3-4 months before I got hired for Marvel is when I really became aware of Valiant. It was right after they relaunched everything in like 2012-13. And I met up with Hunter Gorson, who was their like marketing VP at the time, and you know, he gave me a bunch of the new trades of Shadow Man and Harbinger and all that stuff. So like I read all of that and I really enjoyed it. And then I got sucked into Marvel and like that became my life. That was the only superhero stuff I could read and consume. So jumping back in now has been really fascinating to, you know, I've been jumping around from reading the Jim Shooter, Bob Layton stuff from the 90s, Joe Quesada, you know, like all that old original classic Valiant when Shadow Man used to be a jazz musician at a club.
Yeah, I quite like that. But that was when it was mixed up. We might talk about a bit about this later, but there was almost two universes conjoined. So you had the Solar Man, the Atom, and stuff like that. You had Magnus Robot Fighter back in the old days, but of course you couldn't. They couldn't use them on the new run, could they? So the reboot was almost tighter because of that, wasn't it? You know.
Yeah, for sure. And it's been really fascinating, like jumping through the different eras, because right now Valiant is in a really unique and interesting period where. You know, Shadow Man has ended. Matt Kent's run on X-O Manowar is about to end. Quantum and Woody ended. So everything's about to be kind of relaunched in this new modern era, right when, like, the Bloodshot movie's about to hit and the Harbinger movie's about to hit. Yeah. And, like, Quantum and Woody, the TV show, is going to happen and Faith is getting developed. And so, you know, Valiant is about to be... So
I think people are beginning to realize, sorry to interrupt, Heather, but I think people are beginning to realize from what you say there that it is the third universe, isn't it? You've got Marvel, you've got DC, and then you've got, I mean, if you kind of BPRD isn't that big, but you've got Valiant that is this whole intertwined, interlocking narrative now, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it's really interesting I'm trying to put it to words. It's really hard.
That's all right.
You are right though. Like it's Marvel and DC and then like Valiant, and like because Valiant doesn't have the movie yet, right? Like everything is just brimming under the surface. And we've got one more year, you know, until February 2020 when Bloodshot comes out.
Yeah, can't wait for that.
Which I just saw the sizzle reel of this past week. And
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, it's super, super exciting. I can't wait until like people talk about it more because
how does the film end?
Everyone's a ghost.
It all fades to black and then there's a credit sequence.
That's a great
exclusive
answer.
Everyone. Exclusive.
You know, I don't wanna get you too excited, but that is how it ends.
Okay.
But no, it's really exciting though, because like we are at the cusp of bringing Valiant to the forefront of media in a way that it never has been before. And so it's such an exciting time for all the comics being in this era when, like, again, Ninjak, Harbinger, like all of the Valiant mainstays are about to be relaunched with new talent right as the movie hits. And I can't say too much right now because a lot of stuff hasn't been announced yet, but I cannot wait for you guys to see what creators we're working with.
Oh, wow.
What writers we have, artists we have. Like, if you are a Marvel and DC fan, but have never tried Valiant, like, now is the time because some of your favorites might be playing in our field now. That's all I'm saying.
Jim Starlin on EXO. Can you sort that out for me?
Yeah.
Oh, that is brilliant. I'm genuinely really excited. I've loved everything Valiant, and it's probably consistently the series the publisher that I've bought the most of. You know.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for this movie. If that's the way you're doing it, Heather, I admire you. I admire the chutzpah of your company because that's what I think Marvel and DC miss a little bit. They don't seem to coincide events with movie releases.
Yeah, that's
and I think that's what needs doing.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I mean, and I know not just us, but I've heard it on other podcasts, people lament the fact of, like, they've got these big movies, you know, they're making billions of dollars, you know, everyone and their sister has got a Funko Pop of a different character, but they're not capitalizing on, you know,
it's not reflected.
This is a comic. Go to your local comic book shop. Is that something that Valiant are definitely going to try and think about when this new media sort of goes forward, to try and work together with the movies and the TV series or whatever it is, to try and bring people back to the comics as well?
The cross promotion,
I mean, that is definitely something that Valiant, we are working very closely with the studios. We're working closely with Sony. We're working closely with DMG. To try and figure out, you know, like, obviously the movie universe is going to be its own thing and the comics are still going to be its own thing. But we do, it is very, very important to us that people who see the movie can read the comics and see the same characters and vice versa. You know, that's super, super important to any franchise, not just Valiant. And that is something that we talk about all the time. That's why I just got to see the sizzle reel. Is, you know, it's important that editorial sees what is going on so we can figure out how can we creatively, as we're launching all these new series, make things feel a bit more cohesive and of the same universe.
We're all in it together. It's all the same thing. That's what I think some companies miss, is the comics and the movies are the same. They're the same character. They're the same fans, you know. You've got to keep it consistent, haven't you? You know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's, you know, you want to be able to watch the movie and see the same character and feel the same universe. And that, you know, I think that's that. I think Marvel has done a better job than DC has in that realm.
Yeah, and I think Spider-Verse, for example, got it right. You know?
100%. Like, Spider-Verse absolutely nailed it. You know, I feel like this, that's part of the reasons why the Star Wars comics have been as successful as they were, is because you read those comics and it feels like you're in the movie universe. And same thing with why the Deadpool movie was as successful as it is you watch Deadpool and, like, that is the Deadpool from the comics, 100% through. And like, that's been my struggle with, you know, with the film universe is, you've got the source material that is so loved by so many people, and it's existed for so long for a reason. Lean into that. You know, just a name and a costume isn't going to do it for you. The heart has to be there. Yeah. And if there's one thing that I know that Valiant has is we know our characters and our heart is there. And so hopefully that shows through to you guys.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. Well, that's great news.
I can't wait to see more of that. But you talked about a relaunch of, like, the series and stuff. Now, obviously, I think in this day and age, when people hear the words reboot, relaunch, they think, oh, does that mean everything's going to change?
Just clarify. We begin to worry, don't we?
Yeah, just clarify. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So it's not new continuity, right? It's nothing like that. It's
great.
It's, you know, it's one of the things that I think that I know I have noticed. Is Valiant has some very, very loyal fans, and we love our fans. Like, you guys are so hardcore. You buy everything and you love the characters so much. But something I've noticed while I've been, like, you know, getting to know the universe is a lot of the stuff, a lot of the newer stuff that has been coming out recently has almost been, it's been really hard for a casual audience member to break in. Because it is so reliant on continuity. You know, like, oh, for you to understand Livewire, which is the first series I was brought on to finish out when I got on Valiant, if you're to understand Livewire, well, you had to have read Harbinger Wars too.
And maybe Unity and maybe a few others, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, but what if you haven't, right? You read that number one. And you feel lost, and so you're not going to read number two. And that has been a huge issue. So, like, when like Matt Kent, you know, he's stepping away from XO 26, I believe, is his last issue. I'm in charge of the new XO, so I'm launching a brand new EXO series later this year in the fall. That's all I can say. I can't tell you anything else about it.
What approach is Jason Aaron taking with it?
Well, you'll find out when it's announced. Which actually will be pretty soon. I believe it's getting announced in March. I could be wrong. It's very, very important to me that these new number ones, you know, they honor continuity. They don't break continuity, but they are fresh and exciting, full of new characters and new casts that aren't so heavily reliant on backstory that a new reader can be excited about these characters.
Yeah. The new run of EXO did a few years ago as well, didn't it? It kind of reimagined it a little, and you could jump on that sort of first arc there easily. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. The legacy characters truly have to be that, don't they? I mean, I think, you know, if you told me, here's a new Conan number one, I don't know what's happened with Conan, past, present, or wherever, but I know as soon as I pick up that issue one, I've got an idea of who he is, and as long as it just takes me on a fresh story, that's fine, isn't it? You're away and you're off to the races.
So long as the heart of the character is there, again, you respect the heart of the character. That's what matters, you know. Spider-Man. Well, I was gonna say it's like the Spider-Man Homecoming, right? We didn't need his origin in that movie for that movie to work. We just had to have the heart of the character there. And I feel like there's been this tendency whenever there's a new number one where people need to like, okay, I have to rehash out the origin. I have to do all this backlog and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's not the case. If people want to read the origin, they will take it upon themselves to go back and read the origin. You don't have to rehash it out for them. You just have to tell them who that character is in the first five pages. And so long as you do that, you're sold.
I mean, you could do it as simple as just having an awesome fight scene. And then immediately, you know, a couple of pages in, I know who this character is and they're a badass. That's all I need to know.
But some characters, that is all you need to know. Yeah. Let's face it. You know, all you need to know about EXO is he's a barbarian wearing armor and he's got, he's a warrior with the heart of a warrior, you know.
As long as we
take off from there, you know.
Yeah. That's how I sell him. I sell him. He is Conan in an Iron Man suit. Like, that's how I sell him. Like, that's who he is. That's what makes him unique. And
so I know you've only been there almost a couple of months now, Heather, but who do you see as the sort of the mainstays of the universe, who are, you know, the heart and soul of Valiant? To me there's, you know, Eternal Warrior and there's Faith and there's people who are always going to be there, aren't there? But who do you see as people you want there, the string, you know, almost like the Unity team without having the Unity banner above it, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I see EXO for sure as one of those. EXO, Bloodshot, Rai is a big one. I love our future universe with Rai.
So Rai's coming back, isn't he? So Rai's been missing for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have Fallen World going on right now, which is our big like Rai event. So he's in that, and there's some exciting things coming out of Fallen World having to do with Rai. Nice. And I'm just going through and making sure, like, what can I talk about? But like, Ninjak is super exciting to me. Anyone who follows me knows, I'm a huge, huge James Bond fan. So James Bond in a ninja suit, I'm all for it.
I'm going to just jump in there and say, can we please get Paul Gulacy just to do one issue? I'd buy a page of that, definitely, Heather. That's just, and you're right, he's kind of the new master of Kung Fu, isn't he? With a techno sort of side to him.
Yeah. I'll pass that on to the Ninjak editor.
Thank you very much.
But I will pass that on. like Shadow Man is definitely up there. You know, Faith, obviously. Harbinger is a big one. And we haven't seen him in a while. Archer and Armstrong, Quantum and Woody.
Archer and Armstrong are such a great buddy cop movie, aren't they? They're just... Mm. They're such a great pairing. Since Barry Windsor Smith onwards, I've really loved those characters.
Yes. They're so much fun. I hope they come back soon. Because, I don't know, there's something, like, cool about, like, this buddy cop Indiana Jones-esque, like, element to them that they have, like, traveling and, like, finding different artifacts and whatever.
With a little bit of a sort of Scientology almost, you know, they're almost from like a strange cult, isn't he?
There's like there's a weird sort of like pseudo religious like creepiness.
Yeah.
So good.
And it's a very different sort of buddy comedy to Quantum and Woody, which is
Like Quantum and Woody is your odd couple, right? Quantum and Woody is Oscar and Felix, and it just like it makes you cringe so much, but in like a loving way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they are literally two sort of characters that are pretty much handcuffed together. Do you know what I mean? You know, they did, and
I mean they are essentially.
Which is the conceit. But then they've done so much with those characters. I remember when the first relaunch happened, Quantum and Woody was one that I was definitely interested in. And when I saw the directions they took that in, which some of it was quite sort of horror based in some of the villains, I was like, whoa, this is this is not going how I thought it was going to go. But it was still making me laugh my ass off. And it had a goat in it. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You're happy.
Exactly. No, one of the series that I, when I jumped to Valiant, that I was like, all right, if there's ever a time for this to happen again when you guys are ready, I dibs Quantum and Woody. Mainly because just my background on Deadpool and Gwenpool, I was like, this is a genre, you know, that I know, and I know how to work, and I know the talent I want to bring to it. So
But
again, that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. we didn't come here to get all the information out of you. All you got to tell us and our listeners is there's amazing Valiant comics about.
It's going to be great,
and that's that is literally all we need.
There's so much. I almost wish that we did this podcast like a month later, because then there'd be so much more for me to talk about. But I guess you can have me back. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, almost, yeah. Yeah. The thing we really love, or I certainly love, and we talk about this all the time, Heather, is it's just good adventure stories to me. Yes. Do you know what I mean? Yes. That's the thing about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love. There's a real escapism to stuff like Eternal Warrior and, you know, these sort of books.
Yeah.
Really great.
Yeah. So loads of exciting stuff coming out with Valiant, but I know from watching your social media and stuff, you're all about like sourcing talent and finding out where the new voices are and stuff, which I love. So how important is it to you to find, you know, new voices for like the comics that you may have, I don't know, a year, 2 years in the future?
I think it's so important. I mean, like, I, you know, a big part of my social media presence that I've made for myself is, you know, because I have this large platform, I want to help get the word out about new projects and new creators, and help new creators find each other to collaborate, and other editors too. Like, I don't just do it for myself. I do it for the medium.
And I've noticed about your social media as well, it's not just, oh, are there any good artists out there? Are there any good writers? And that's it. You say letterers, colorists, you just cover the complete gambit of like making a comic.
It's because it's so important, you know, like every letterer brings something so different to the table. And same thing with colorists, and same thing, you know, like there's a reason why specific colorists work with specific pencilers and inkers and writers. It's you know, it's why people have one business partner that they work with.
They're the rhythm section of the band, aren't they? They don't always get the photo shoots and the glamour, and people don't always talk about them as much. But if you didn't have a decent rhythm section, your band sucks. It's as simple.
Exactly, 100%. You got it. And so I think it's really, really important. And one of the things that I've never taken for granted in my career is that I had a lot of help getting to where I got. You know, if it wasn't for people telling me, oh, you should talk to, you know, so-and-so, or introducing me, or holding my hand along the way as I'm, you know, stumbling through and learning different aspects of publishing and comics making, I wouldn't be where I'm at now. And it's so important for me to use my platform to do the same for other creators and help other people out, because one, like, it's just the right thing to do. I know how much it meant to me when I was just a comics journalist, you know, doing reviews about Superman Unchained and Batman. And then Scott Snyder followed me and DM'd me and said, thank you so much. Like, I really appreciate what you're
doing.
It really
makes our day. It really does.
It made me think like, oh shit, maybe I'm doing the right thing. You know, maybe I actually have a shot at this. And so, like, that's a huge part of why I do it, is just I want to help inspire and give people the motivation to keep going, because it sucks, man. Like, sitting in your room creating and getting no positive feedback, even though you're trying your best, like, it sucks. And so, like, I want to be able to be that force of motivation for someone else. Like, even if me just liking their post or liking their tweet or retweeting them or whatever,
yeah,
gives them like some bit of warm fuzzy for the day to help them keep going. Yeah, that's like, cool. That's why I do it. Because I know what it meant to me. And, and so if for whatever reason, you know, someone tweets me, and then on top of that, it's someone that I'm like, oh shit, you do cool work. I think you're ready for a professional job. And I can talk to them about, like, you know, maybe we can collaborate down the line, like, then bully for me. Like, that's great for me.
Yeah.
But like, that's not why I do it. I do it because it's important to me to help motivate other creators.
And plus, with those threads, and you see it a lot of the time when you see some of these big creators, or, you know, sort of say, oh, you know, give me an artist that you love and I'll retweet it or something. There are writers, there are artists, there's collaborators everywhere just looking at some of those threads and thinking, that person's brilliant, I want to work with them. And then that, you never know who's going to, like, collaborate based on what a retweet is or something like that.
Oh, I think 100%, I think as well. 100%. Yeah.
I mean, like, even like, I don't know if you guys have seen my penguin shit recently with the Valiant.
Yeah, we have.
But like that started out as a joke, but because I got so much fan art, like, this is a thing that might actually happen, you know? And it blows my mind. But like it's things that happened with Marvel. Like, I would joke about, you know, like, I would just post a tweet about, like, oh, I really like this horror concept, or why haven't we seen any of this character? And a writer would talk to me, and then an artist would chime in, and then all of a sudden, 2 weeks down the road, we have a phone call and a pitch, and a comic is happening. Like, you know, amazing. Like, that's, you know, you guys want to know how the cake gets made. Like, that's how it gets made sometimes. That's, you know, that's why I put it out there. You know, you put it out in the universe and see what comes back. And I think
we're in competition with so many other media as well, you know, TVs and films and cartoons, and just comics are in competition with the phones that are in people's pockets these days, you know, and we are all in it together, aren't we? Unless we do this sort of stuff, you know, sales are going to decline and the things might end up disappearing. I mean, unless everyone sort of joins in and stops flipping arguing with each other, you know, just the positivity will shine through. I think, Heather, I'm a great believer in that. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. So obviously, lots of our listeners are comic makers and creative folk, and no doubt one or two have plans or dreams, etc., to work with a bigger name publisher, not just Marvel and DC, but just, you know, we're talking across the board, anyone that considers it to be a name, do you know what I mean, beyond all those boxes you've got in your living rooms. So it's a bit of a broad question, but before we let you go, what advice would you give to any of our sort of up and coming comic creators who wants to pursue work, like, you know, for another title or another sort of original property that, for instance, Valiant, for instance, if they want to write a Valiant character, you know, what advice would you give?
I think the big thing is, if you want to write comics or draw comics for a specific publisher, the big thing is, you know, I say, if I ever gave a TED talk, I'd title it this: "Don't be a dick and do the thing."
Is that, like, your business card, Heather?
Yeah.
No, my business card says "Destroyer of Words and Childhoods." and that's true talk. That is 100% what's on my business card.
Amazing.
You know, if you want to write comics, write comics. If you want to draw comics, draw comics. There's no better time in the world than now to be doing this, you know, between Tumblr and Twitter and Webtoons and Comixology and all these different platforms where, you know, you don't need to print a comic. You don't need to have a publisher. Like, you can do it yourself. You can self-promote and do the work and get it out there on your own. So if you want to do it, the only thing stopping you is you.
Yeah.
And I you know, I paid my own way, and the fact of I wanted to be an editor, so I just talked to editors. I just figured out what it is you do. You know, I did the work. I wasn't an asshole to people. Yeah. I think that's a big thing too. Like, people aren't going to remember if you're an asshole. Comics is a very, very, very tiny community. We all work super hard. You know, we all don't sleep together. You know, we're all up all hours of the night in the trenches making these little floppy books that people read and then throw away and never think about ever again. So the people you work with, you want them to be nice people. And so it's so important that, you know, you're working with people that you like, you're working with people that you rely on, you're working with people that you can trust. And so that's why I always say, like, don't be a dick and just do the thing. And it's going to take you in any industry, not just comics, in any industry, it's going to take you super, super far. And just don't be impatient. Everyone's path happens at their own time. And especially in any creative fields, you know, it's going to be really slow for a while. And you're going to be stressed because of how slow it is. Yeah. And then it's going to pick up and you're going to be overwhelmed and crying. and then it's going to be slow again. And that's just kind of the pattern of how it goes. But I think it's super important that at the end of the day, you remember and keep close to your heart, like, why it is you're doing what it is you're doing. Okay. And for me, like, I'm creating comics because I love comics and I love sharing stories and I love connecting with other people, and hopefully making the world a little bit brighter.
Yeah. I think that if you're doing any sort of creative endeavor as well, I think you should create it for yourself as well. Because if you think too much, I'm going to work for Marvel or DC, and that doesn't happen, you don't want to have like a catalog that you really didn't care about. Do you know what I mean? If you can say, oh, well, I never worked on Batman, but I put out two graphic novels that I absolutely adore. You know, that's the main thing. No one
but
can take
we
that
see
away,
that we see that in Valiant as well. Like, Matt Kinn is making EXO his own. And that's why it's so good to me, because it's got that twist on it. You know, it's got that character and personality that we know we get from his books. So that's why I really enjoy it. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and another thing I would suggest to you for all creatives, it's a thing that I do, and it might be a little cheesy, but it makes a huge difference to me. Is, again, you know, we put our heart and soul into everything we create, and sometimes it's with very little reward and very little gratitude. And, you know, like, I work my ass off on every single project I do, and then, you know, some asshole on the internet is going to find like one typo and say everything I do is trash, and you know, I should kill myself because I forgot where a comma went or whatever. And, you know, sometimes the shit gets to you and it sucks. But, like, I have a little folder I keep on my phone and on my desktop called Nice Things. And it's where I put, like, all the fan art that people send to me and, like, the little fun tweets that people send to me about how much, you know, like, my work means to them. Or, like, nice comments that people said about my work. And I think it's important for creators to do this so that, you know, when it does get hard and tough and you're at the office for 16 hours because you're on deadline, you're trying to get this book to the printer and for whatever reason you can't, you know, you have this folder to look to and kind of remind you, like, this is why I'm doing it. Like, this is why seeing this little girl dressed as Gwenpool, this is why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that's important.
Yeah, totally. And Heather, I must say, knowing our listeners who, we know we've met quite a lot of them, and they are lovely people. Expect to get a few sort of messages over the next few days once this episode comes out, because this has been fantastic. You are welcome back anytime.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, but where can people find you online, etc., if they want to know more about what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to find me online. You can find me at Twitter at Heather Antos, Instagram at Heather Antos, or my website, heatherantos.com. It's just my name, Heather Antos, A-N-T-O-S. Yes, talk to me there. I talk to pretty much everyone who talks to me, so.
Awesome. That's brilliant in this day and age. Plus, where can you get one of those awesome Valiant ties? Because I saw you...
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if they're available to the public. I think they might have been a Comics Pro thing only, which was this week in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I rarely dress smartly, but you know, I would for one of those ties.
I don't know for sure, but I think they might have been exclusive for retailers that went to Comics Pro. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah. Well, they look badass.
But I do have an extra one.
Don't tease him, Ed.
Look, we'll talk off air.
We can talk offline because yeah, I do have an extra one sitting at my desk.
Send your PayPal over. He'll send some money down.
Yeah. Oh yes, thank you very much, Heather. This has been brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, we're really excited by your company, Heather. It is genuinely just great comics, and we're stuck by it for years now. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I had such a blast on the show, guys. If you ever want me back, I'd be more than willing.
We'd love that. Yes. We'd absolutely love that. Yeah.
Look at that. Another fantastic interview in the bag.
Really good. Well, and I hope it happened, and I hope she turned up, because we haven't actually met her yet.
Yeah.
Every week, I try to keep up the pretense of, like, you could never be in the magic circle, could you?
You're just lying to the listeners. What do they call it? What does Trump call it? Fucking false truth.
Fake news.
Fake pod.
No, we'll have none of that. Right, people come here for entertainment. They don't want the truth.
Can they handle the truth?
I don't think they could. I mean,
have you seen the delusion on Twitter? Nobody can handle the truth.
No. But the truth was that was an awesome interview.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
So, thanks, Heather.
Yeah, thank you very much, Heather. And now it's just us again. Sorry, folks.
Yeah.
But if you're still with us, then thank you very much, because we've got some great comics to recommend in a sec. But first, what are the shout-outs? Shout-outs, James?
Shall I do my one first?
Go for it.
Yes.
We got sent through a comic by Michael Robertson, our pal. He's got a new comic out from Off Kilter Comics, and it's called The Light. And I have to say, have you seen it yet, guys? Have you?
No, I have not.
No.
It's genuinely fucking pretty special, I've got to tell you. So it's written by Michael, art by Martina Rossi, who does the colours as well, and letters by Mike Stock. So it's all a few of our pals there. It's a sort of, richly imagined and sort of richly drawn, coloured, otherworldly sort of fantasy tale. The art is pretty fucking great, and the writing's pretty good as well. I'd compare Martina's style to maybe like Ian Ashcroft or Lyndon White, something like that.
Oh,
that
nice
sort of style to it.
Yeah.
If you go to off-kiltercomics.com, you can get yourself a copy. I think it's digital at the moment, and he's likely to be printing it soon. And also to add to that, it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Michael Robertson.
Happy birthday.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, I might get into that a bit more in a couple of weeks, but I know we've been an All Valiant issue this week.
Yes.
So, but I thought it definitely deserved a mention. There you go. Yeah. That's my one.
Yeah. What about you, Dan?
I was going to give a shout-out to Samuel George London's Beyond Milford Green.
Oh, yeah.
We have 6 days left to go when you hear this podcast, and the goal is £4,000. We're at £399 and £393.
We'll make it. He's all over it.
That's the follow-up to the wildly successful Milford Green. Let's give that a go. Check that out.
Yeah.
And, check out his podcast as well. Comics.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Comics. Have you arranged when you're going to go on there?
I am indeed. I'm recording this very week as we speak.
Oh, that's
nice one. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to mention us a lot?
No. Not at all. In fact, I'm going to pretend that you don't exist. Or in my personal
pocket. What, like Joe? Like Joe does?
She doesn't pretend. She just hopes.
Ouch.
See, the listeners think this is all true, Tony, but in real life, we're all friends.
Best friends. I call her my best friend.
Yeah.
When I see her, I say, how are you best friends? She likes that. That's quite funny. Yeah. And then she sharpens knives and stuff.
Yeah. Just stares at you with sharpening a knife. Anyway, I got a couple of shout-outs this week. First up, thanks to Rachel and Andy from the BAM Comics Collective. I met with them for a coffee on Thursday night. And that was always good fun catching up with them. Wanted to kind of have like just to catch up away from comics. Do you ever do this sometimes? I think it's quite nice. I mean, because sometimes when you meet up with people, it's to either to organise or to talk about projects or whatever. Whereas sometimes you just want to have a bit of a chinwag, don't you?
Just want to go clubbing, don't you?
Just go absolute clubbing. Yeah, dancing around.
I saw some pictures of the band that Rachel was in this week. She was in. I'm blanking on the name of the band now, but she was in a band. Quite a cool looking band.
I remember you telling us about this last week.
Birkin Babes, something like that, I think it was called. Yeah, pretty cool.
So, so thanks to them. That was good. I mean, when we met up, I did catch a little bit of preview artwork from Andy's comic, which is kickstarting at the moment. Which
I keep forgetting to mention that. Yeah.
Mondo Comics Underground presents Octobriana Hammer, which is a book all about. It's the character Octobriano, isn't it? Which has been there for years. Now, I saw some of the artwork for it. He's pretty much almost completed the book, and it looks stunning. Plus, it's almost slightly set in the Hammer universe, which is always good with me because I absolutely love the Hammer films, and you know Andy's a big fan of them. So yeah, definitely check that out on Kickstarter. He's already met his goal, but he's got some exciting things set up for the stretch goals and stuff. And another shout out to the wonderful, marvelous Tom from That Comic Smell, our buddy.
Who
sent us very kindly sent us some comics this week, and we love him. And if you want to hear more from him, he actually interviewed us about a comic a couple of shows ago.
An awesome comic.
Yeah, it was indeed. Speaking of which, all four issues of our comic, Awesome Comics, are available now. We don't shout about this enough, I don't think. We're always telling people, how do you get their word out about your comics? Yeah.
Well, how about your brilliant comic? Well, back to us again.
Yeah. But seriously, we need to sell it for some of the plans that we have coming up.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say. But where can you get all four issues, Dan?
If you go to the awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com, we're selling the print bundle for all four comics for a tenner. We've got each issue of the digital to £1, and a print copy of a single one's £3. So it's best to go for the bundle and get the four in that one.
Yeah,
go for it.
I like to go for a bundle.
Bundle! Now, obviously, we're hugely proud of this comic, but it's proper good fun, and we'll be talking about it more over the coming weeks and stuff. So, and we've got plenty of issues, don't we? Well, each one of us has issues, but that's completely different.
I'm all right. None about you two.
Well, I mean, the half an hour we get before we start recording, Tony.
I did tell you a very amusing story about a job interview where I told them to stick up their arse in the middle of the interview this week. So, yeah.
That made my night, that did.
they're doing these health and wellbeing courses at work. Like, so if you get troubles, so you can get counselling.
Good idea.
How many counselling sessions do you get? You get six. So what happens if you're not sort of sorted out after that? And the woman just like shrugged.
That sex addiction of yours ain't going to get solved in six sessions, is it? Let's face it.
I just love the HR lady just shrugged. Yeah, what are you going to do? Okay.
Oh, dear. Anyway, as it's a valiant flavoured show. Oh, you got another one? Of course.
Interrupt, yes.
Go for it.
Okay.
And Gwyn's. We got sent a lovely review copy of that. And I've read through most of that. It's on my tablet. And that's fantastic. Penguin's just absolutely killing it, as always.
I need to go home because I'm in another travel lodge at the moment. So it'll hopefully be waiting for me when I get home tomorrow.
Yeah.
Alan's done good. I think that's and a new print edition coming out or going to be out. I'll look it up and we can put it in the show notes. I'll send it on to Vince to put in there.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Thank
nice work.
Did you lol?
Oh, yes. He done that. I wonder if Alan's in the group because there's one where the penguins break out of the frame and interact out of it. And we've been having a discussion in the Awesome Comic Groups about comics that come out of the frame and play with the format. I'd never experienced that kind of stuff before. So, like, say something like on panel four, someone throws something out the panel. And then at the bottom of the page, the last panel, someone gets hit on the head with it.
Yeah, I like that sort of thing. Yeah.
Always cool.
That's been going on for donkey's years. Occasionally you see it, just it peaks again, doesn't it? But yeah, I know what you mean. I like that sort of thing. Yeah. Of originality. It doesn't work all the time, but yeah.
Now, from those great comics to this week's recommendations. So we're doing something a little bit themed this week, aren't we, gents?
Yeah, yeah.
So we thought, as we're talking about Valiant, why not each one of us talk about a Valiant book that we've enjoyed? Now, Tony, you know, you've been flying the flag for this company for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, to be fair, I've been into them since they started. Was it the late 80s, early 90s when it was? I've liked them since then.
Yeah. So do you want to take it away with the one you want to recommend?
Well, shall I go, because mine's in the event, so it's the current
event
at the moment, the one I'm doing. So they don't go nuts with their events. They're not like cross issues. You know, they don't, and I like the fact that you don't have to read every book in the run. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So this is the one I'm going to talk about, is Incursion, issue one. So it's written by Andy Diggle and our past guest, Alex Packnadel. Art by Doug Braithwaite, and I will gush about Doug's work in a second. Colours by Jose Villarubia. Letters by Marshall Dillon. As I say, it's the first issue in this new event, but it's not like an overly long one. I think it's 5 issues long. It's central to the first issue is Gilad Anipada, also a.k.a. Gilad Abrams, a.k.a. the Eternal Warrior, who's one of my favourite characters in there, and no doubt you will have just heard me talk about that in an interview with Heather. Does anyone know when he first appeared, Eternal Warrior?
No.
So he first appeared in Solar, Man of the Atom, issue number 10 in 92. Now, Solar is obviously lost to them, so they held the rights to a couple of other characters, didn't they, in Solar, Man of the Atom being one of them. But he's an immortal warrior. He's like the greatest sort of fighter, if you know what I mean. But he's also, as well as being this sort of cross between sort of a Conan the Barbarian character, he's also like a traveler and a wise man, and he's great with tactics and he's a thinker, but he's immortal as well. So he's brother of Ivar Time Walker, who had his own series for a short amount of time, I think 3 trades worth in the Valiant, new Valiant universe. And he's also the brother of Armstrong from Archer and Armstrong, who are great, really great characters. They're sort of like a little bit like sort of buddy cop comic relief kind of stuff. Yeah. He's got relationships with Exo, who I know you're going to talk about in a second, V, aren't you? And Ninjak, and they're kind of very real relationships. They're sort of often sort of fractured. They don't always get on. They were on a team called Unity, which kind of plays a bit into the one you're going to talk about a bit, I think, Vince, actually. He's been killed, he's come back, his story's sort of scattered throughout time. So if you read the old series and this series, you know, he's in different time zones. He's in the First World War, he's on other dimensions, he's on other realms of existence, he's in the sort of the plane where sort of people who've died go to. But one of his main jobs is protecting the Geomancer. The Geomancer is a sort of a single person who is reborn throughout Earth's history and is kind of like the Earth magician wizard kind of character who's like the protector of Earth. But the Geomancer takes various forms, and sometimes they're an adult woman, but in this one it's a child, and she's sort of being protected by Gilad. And so the book opens it's sort of really weirdly imagined, like brilliantly imagined, strange alien world, one of those ones that's sort of a cross between an LSD trip, sort of fantasy world and a sci-fi world, all in one go. You know, there's a necromantic infection from a blue-skinned old alien queen called the Imperatrix Virago, and she's destroying the place. And it turns out she claimed to be there to stop this sort of fast decay of the planet, but instead she's kind of ingesting energy, like a sort of queen, female queen Galactus kind of thing. With her, she has this childlike figure called Scintilla, who's kind of a mystery. She's kind of like the evil mirror image of the Geomancer in a way. And then it switches to Idaho, Earth, and Gilad, and the current Geomancer, who's called Tama, and they're hiding out at a Gate facility. Now, Gate is kind of the Valiant Universe's work version of S.H.I.E.L.D., kind of.
Okay.
And they're the Global Agency for Threat Excision, Gate. And they're in this sort of decommissioned Black Ops area. And she notices that the girl notices the book of the Geomancer, which makes reoccurred throughout the history of the recent history of the Valiant Universe, is screaming. And the book sort of, it's really nicely done by Braithwaite. It looks like the book is sort of disfigured almost. And a portal opens, and the Eternal Warrior does, you know, returns to that sort of violent cycle of what he does with a big fucking axe. and attacks all these sort of alien ghost zombie things that come out of this hole, this sort of hole in reality. And it's kind of just, it is, I mean, it's hard to say, look, a book, first book of an event is always a setup, isn't it? You've always got to explain what the problem's going to be, and then you start the story. And it kind of suffers a little bit from too much setup. But what are you going to do? You can't not set something up. Do you know what I mean? So it does move you out of what you expected for, any kind of events, really. Valiant are sort of quite well known for just sort of strange. If you look at something like Eternity, you know, that miniseries, which is something of an event, was just bizarre.
Yeah,
just
it was.
Beautiful, but just strange. We all read that, I think, didn't we? And a lot of the listeners went and read it as well, and they sort of found it a really sort of rich story. And Divinity, which sort of preceded that. But what it does, it successfully sets up, and it successfully sets up this sort of real danger that the characters are walking into with a very sort of powerful villain. But I did really enjoy it. It does build the anticipation, and it works well like that. And listen, if Doug Braithwaite could draw, he could draw the Bible, and I'd read it. Do you know what I mean? He's that good. He's got a real grasp of sort of human physicality. He knows how to draw a person, you know, swinging an axe or waving their hand, or he knows how to draw a child, you know. And a lot, it's not something that is that easy to do, and a lot of people can't carry it off. But what he also does, which I really like about his stuff, is his characters carry drama in their faces, so there's a real emotion, a real sort of peak of like frightened and brave and, you know, gravitas in the faces of these characters, and he doesn't shy away from that. The alien world is just fucking, is creepy, and having spoken to Alex previously, I know he's a big fan of sort of out there sci-fi. He's a big sort of Philip K. Dick fan, and there's these sort of things, these big sort of jellyfish thing, a combination of jellyfish and ladies' toilet parts floating above the planet. It's just like really strange. It's unashamed, as we've said before about a lot of the Valiant news, unashamed sort of just action, which I kind of like. Balls to the wall action. This ain't gonna end well. You always do worry a little bit about the Eternal Warrior. It never always goes quite well for him. There is a tragic quality to him as well. Yeah, so really good. I think if you're going to read this and you enjoy it, then I'd look for Wrath of the Eternal Warrior by Robert Venditti, I'm a big fan of, and Raoul Allen. There's the trade for that. Really, really, really nice. And then the quote on the trade for that really strikes a chord with that character. The Eternal Warrior shapes history at the end of his axe. I think it's just like a perfect summary of what he's like. You know what I mean? It's a really good series. I'm behind it now. There's a few that I buy the issues, and like a freak, I buy the trades, and it will be stuff about Eternal Warrior. It will be Bloodshot. It will be EXO. Mm. And they produce some nice issues as well. And I'm not a big fan of variant covers, but they do some like nice experimental stuff on their variant covers as well. So, yeah. So my one is Incursion issue 1. There you go. Very good. Nice. It came out last week. Yeah.
There you go. So I think I'll go next. Following up from, obviously, Tony's...
Okay, mate.
Tony's got, you know, history with Valiant, and, like, you know... We all know that, like, he's recommended their books quite a few times. And I know I've got a few trades, and I'm a big fan of some of the series, but there was one series that I'd never... I got the trade for Volume 1. I remember when we went to London Super Comic Con all these years ago, and I picked up a lot of first trades. So I got Volume 1, but it's one of those ones that's still on the to-read pile. You know that never... you know.
And the one you got was the Volume 1 of the first...
Yes.
Relaunch, wasn't it? Yeah, which is still good.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this week, I thought I'd try a little experiment, because the late, great Stan Lee, he obviously said that everyone's, you know, whatever the issue should be of a comic, it could be anyone's first issue of a comic. And I thought, okay, this is issue 24 of EXO Manowar. This is the run that started in 2017, I believe, isn't it, Tony? I think.
About right, man. Yeah, I reckon it is. Yeah.
So obviously, I haven't read any of the preceding issues, but I thought, okay, let's try it with this one. I've got a vague idea of the character. You know, I know more about the other, you know, people in the Valiant universe than EXO, but I've heard nothing but good things. Let's see if this issue buys me in on the series. Which I haven't tried this experiment before. Normally with some of the big two companies, that is a failed experiment, let me tell you.
But I mean, this is an important experiment as well, because if comics are going to survive, people are going to have to jump in.
Yes.
They're not going to go in a comic shop and go, oh, the next jumping on point is in 2 months and leave. They're never going to go back again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they need, this needs to exist.
I will say this to our listeners. If, like me, you haven't read this series, try this along with us. You know, get this issue, read it, and see if you thought about it the way I did. Because for me, this was a massive home run, and I'm going to go back to issue one of this volume and start from there.
This is very different, this volume as well, because he's off planet for most of it.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's almost like a sort of European comic at the start, where he's part of almost like a sort of Roman army or a gladiatorial army on an alien planet. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Written by Matt Kint, artist by Tomas Giorello, colorist is Diego Rodriguez, letterer is Dave Sharp. There's a whole team of great editors behind this as well. But it says in the issue, you can't keep a good bounty hunter down. Eric of, how do you say the, where he's from? Is it Dacia?
Oh. Yeah, I think it is Dacia. Yeah.
Thought he defeated a group of deadly alien mercenaries for good back on the planet Gorin, but that was just round one. Now these dangerous extraterrestrials have followed Arik all the way back to Earth, and they'll stop at nothing to steal his powerful armor. Arik is about to face the fight of his life. See, I didn't even know that before I bought the issue. It was a blind buy, and just to sort of, you know, I was like, come on, impress me. And impress me it did. Because this,
good.
I know you've read good. This as well, haven't you, Tony? And it's,
I have, yeah. I'll let you lead, mate, because I've got a few things, but I'm equally as impressed. We've been gushing about it, haven't we?
Yeah, this is it's a proper action issue. Anyone who sort of sees the sort of comics that I make knows that there's lots of fights and stuff. So there's plenty of that in droves. There is a poetry to everyone's dialogue and the narration that absolutely blew me away. The visuals are stunning from page one to the amazing last page. Take in mind, I know none of these characters. I know what Exo looks like. I know the basis of what that character is, but I knew nothing about this series. And by the end of it, I was on board. You know, I was seeing things the way his armor worked on the sequential pages, which I thought, that's really interesting. You know how that works.
Yeah, and they changed it a bit in this series, haven't they? It's more communication, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a little...
It's
little,
a being, isn't it?
It's more organic, for instance. And during this issue, he's been beaten up, so the suit is rebooting, and while it's rebooting, these bounty hunters are still trying to kill him and take the suit off him. And he's got to use... I mean, he's getting his ass kicked, but he's got to use... interesting ways to try and defend himself.
But that's always been the thing about Arik, man. Arik is a warrior.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He is a warrior who happens to have a suit of armor.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. He's pretty unbeatable. There's a couple of thing in the first run is he gets challenged by another member of his tribe, and he says he takes the armor off and does him. He just sort of says, fair enough, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's not like Tony Stark, where he's almost like a weak character.
And there's moments where he properly gets stabbed during the fight, and you just think, oh, this isn't good. And then he'll turn around and he'll turn the fight around on the person fighting him. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything for the way the issue ends. There's a wonderful build-up to it from the beginning of the book with another character that may or may not appear at the end.
Now, that character on page two... that rises out of the water, that was the base of Unity, which was the Avalanche University's Avengers.
Oh, amazing. Oh,
yeah, I think is it called Bob or something like that? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think so. But that, I mean, that's just a great visual anyway. It's like something's rising.
It looks great, doesn't it?
Something's rising out of the sea. Plus, you can also see the fish. There's so much of it under the page that you can actually see the fish in the water underneath, which is a great sort of dynamic. Matt Kint, I mean, I've been a fan of his work for a while, but, you know, I'm looking forward to reading this from the beginning. I mean, the narration, which takes place over several pages, but it was like, it is poetry. I know I said it before, but it totally is. I mean, for instance, I won't describe what's happening during it. This is just the narration boxes that happen over the first few pages. Love is a funny thing. How many songs have been written about it? Every song a fiction. Written about a thing that can't be seen. It cannot be proved by science. Yet, here I am. Is this the proof? And then that's when you get the credits page for the comic. And I was like, oh, alongside this, you've got great action as well. But I love, that sort of narration.
But it's so clever that that narration harks to something that happens later in the issue, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So it bumps one into the next. Yeah. And
because it keeps really building. Also, it builds upon it. During this fight, you're getting more of this style of narration. There's one beautiful page that is very reminiscent for some of the amazing European books that we've seen. And that is Exo rising out of rubble. And it's four vertical, like almost page size sort of panels. And he's in a different position. You can literally see him rising through the rubble. There's no there's no dialogue on this page. It's just him climbing through the rubble.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that was beautiful, especially on the guided view. But Exo Man of War was, I loved it. I'm going to go back to this now.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy. I think if you like that issue, go to the new run.
Yeah.
The old run's a little bit more superhero based, and he's sort of finding his people. But I often think it's a bit like Robert E. Howard meets Heinlein. It's got both elements there. He's a barbarian. He's basically Conan, isn't he? You know, kind of. Yeah. But it's also got that sort of Starship Troopers wearing a super-powered uniform kind of thing going on as well.
Yeah,
really interesting.
Yeah, so if you put like Conan, Iron Man, and Starship Troopers in a blender,
sounds like a winning formula.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I think they get some great variants. So Jim Marfood's done some variants for the covers as well.
Yeah,
over the years. Yeah.
So, highly recommended this one. Like I say, I'd like to. See on the group, see if anyone else wants to do this. I think it's like two. I mean, the digital issues were like $2.49, I think. They may be a little bit cheaper by the time.
They dropped, don't they, after 2 months, I think.
Yeah, so it might be cheaper by the time you listen to this. But if you
have. They've always got a sale on as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, try this particular issue, issue 24 of Exo Manowar, if you haven't read any of this series before. And, yeah, let us know what you thought about it, because this was a success. This has got me in to read more of it for a character that I wanted to read more of, but just never got around to, never pulled the trigger on it, as it were. But this is the comic that did it. So yeah, that's my one. Okay, Dan, what's yours?
My one is Bloodshot, Rising Spirit, issue one. Cool. I went back and grabbed the first one because I think it's
a character
that's
got Dan Butcher written all over it.
So the blurb is, before a weapon is deployed in battle, it must be designed, refined, field tested. Bloodshot was no exception. In the early days of the private military contractor Project Rising Spirit, the nano-infused super soldier who would one day become the most violent and valuable asset was a resource to be mined, and it was up to an enterprising team of scientists to ensure that he did what he was told. But memory is a tricky thing, and the man Bloodshot used to be won't let go of his past so easily. I really enjoyed this. It's kind of back to the origins of the character. If you're not kind of familiar with it, it takes it right back to kind of the early days, like when he becomes the super soldier.
It's a confusing origin he's got there, isn't it? Because there's various different brain implants, aren't there?
So that's the problem with it. I think they're doing like a kind of a Wolverine style thing where you're not quite sure what he's in this kind of test chamber, and they're firing all these different memories at him, and he's recalling different things from his past, but he can't trust him. He doesn't know which one's real and which one's not. And these sort of like, it's quite violent. There's violence virtually all the way through this. And it's kind of very much inherent in the character. This is kind of based on that. It's interesting. I want to go and get the second issue almost immediately because you want to see where this goes.
Yeah, it's a fast-paced reading. Definitely.
Yeah, it's really fast-paced. Yeah. Like I was just like, oh wow, I'm at the end of that now. And there's some real nice. I've read it on the guided view. There's some real nice touches the way they've done it. And when you go back to look at the pages, that's the way they laid it out. But there's like one page where there's the countdown, and whoever's done the guided view, it kind of flicks between the numbers going down. Art-wise, it's done by a chap called Kevin Lashley, and there's three finishes on it: Ryan Wynn, Brian Thies, and Oliver Borges, with colorist Diego Rodriguez. It really reminds me of Greg Capullo's stuff.
Okay.
There's a real look to it like that. Yeah. There's some of the finishes not quite like Capullo like, but it's, if I was going to pick what it looks like nearest to, I'm going to go for that. And it's really enjoyable. Great read. Like Tony says, it just absolutely blasts along.
This is a real change of pace from Bloodshot Salvation, which was a much more akin to the Exo book, which is sort of card covers, much more sort of painterly.
Yeah,
this is more cartoony, quicker, not less beautiful, just different. Do you know what I mean?
It's different.
Yeah.
It feels a bit more kind of like it's slick and raw at the same time. It kind of, like I said, it absolutely hammers along. I've read a fair bit of Bloodshot myself, but you could go into this not knowing anything about the character, and you could get it all from that.
Yeah.
So, recommended.
Good man. Nice one.
Nice. Nice. So, some brilliant books there for you all to check out. It's sort of been overdue that we've wanted to do a sort of a Valiant sort of episode, isn't it, really?
Yeah. We've got a couple of themed episodes coming up. We've got another one next week, haven't we?
Yes, we do indeed, of which we'll be announcing that in the coming week. So we really hope you enjoyed this week's episode and got a lot from it, whether it be info, entertainment, or maybe, you know, you're just disgusted with us like you are on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
But whatever it was.
Sick in your mouth.
Yeah, a little bit. But if you don't want Tony to say that anymore, then let us know in several different ways. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. To follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we're getting a little more interactive now. We're posting up a bit more, and thank you to everyone that interacts, retweets, or recently who has said some very, very kind words about the show on their own social media feeds. We truly, truly appreciate
people. Listenership's gone up by a good 50 a week, isn't it? Really shifting at the moment.
So, and we love each and every one of you and hope that we entertain you as well as inform.
Those personal endorsements really go a long way.
Yes.
Just kind of spamming links. Yeah. When you actually say, look, this is really good. Yeah. Check it out.
Oh, and also, I like it when sometimes we have guests on and someone who knows the guest but doesn't necessarily read comics, you know, will listen to the show. And they, you know, we've had some kind words said in those sort of terms as well. So thank you to everyone who listened.
So,
follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to talk more about what we talk about on this show and you want a social media avenue to do it, then we've got a group chat on there called Awesome Comics Talk, which is fantastic. We set it up, but the people that are actually make it brilliant are the people who interact on there. So, and we always get lots of cool feedback, lots of great questions about making comics and just generally the whole comics community and stuff. There's no hard selling and no pointless sort of PR or anything like this. So no negativity to be found there, just lots of comic love. So, yeah, join that if you're on Facebook. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. It really helps get the word out about the show. And whatever networks you heard us on, whether it be maybe it's Spotify. If you're legit like me, I listen to a lot of my podcasts on Spotify now. But there's other networks. Yeah, I am. I'm sitting in a cereal bar as we speak. you also listen to some places like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod German Shepherd.
One of my favourites.
I thought it's a Germ Shepherd, which sounds like...
I tried to keep it a bit cleaner this week because we've had a lady on. I'm always trying to be
and
a bit
I truly, that. Truly appreciate that, Tony.
Thank you. It's obviously an allusion to my hairy body, but people might not get that. You know what
I mean? Yeah. You're a little bit like one of the characters from the Umbrella Academy.
I haven't seen that yet, although I did listen to Frontline, which is sort of a hoity-toity up its own arse, Radio 4 podcast about the arts. And the bloke who reviewed it came on and said, look, don't watch it, read the comic first. And I was like cheering in my car listening to this man say that. And I thought, good man. Yes. So I'm going to read the comic and then I'm going to watch it. That's my plan.
It's a good comic. I got the first two trades. Which
nice one, man.
This series is both trades. It's very interesting the way they mixed it. I'll talk about it another time. We're not here to talk about TV shows. We're talking about goddamn comics all the time. And thank you very much for listening to us talk about it. So where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter or neverrunanything.blogspot.co.uk. I'm back on there. I had a few weeks off it because I was busy writing stuff, but there's a couple going up this week.
Nice. What about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Nice. Which you should. Nice. I'm loving this current issue, Dan.
Cheers. I'm really enjoying doing this one.
I can see the enjoyment is there for all to see if you go to VanguardComic.com. I love it. So, and I especially love your Patreon videos, which make me laugh every week. I love them. I love them. And
it's become impression now because I've got to think of a joke.
No, I won't worry about that. I mean, all you were doing was reading out the names of some of your characters, but because you were trying to stop yourself from laughing, made me laugh. And also,
laughing at my own jokes.
Yeah, that's all we do week on week. Anyway, yeah. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. Thank you very much to Heather for joining us this week, and thank you all listening. So from all of us at Awesome HQ, Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Go forth and read loads of amazing indie comics and just spread the positivity about comics. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Yes. Don't you think they should do that, Tony?
It may be, yeah.
Yeah. See you, everybody.
See ya.
Yeah. Hustling and shit.
that's got to be just all of our outtakes. It's just got to be Dan going hustling and shit.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple of seconds and then I'll do my semi-professional intro bit.
This is a bit where we try and make him laugh.
Don't make me laugh. Right.
Challenge accepted.
Oh, God.
Right. Don't laugh. Don't do it.
Don't.
I'm watching you.
Oh, oh God! Is the
cover
book?
That web? Cover that web.
Cursing is allowed. I'm not saying you have a potty mouth, but if you do, it's fine.
Yeah. Oh, we kind of encourage it, Heather. To be honest, it's not just allowed.
Well,
it's kind
fuck
of
you.